This is Democracy Now!
This sets a dangerous precedent for all media organizations and journalists in Europe and elsewhere around the world. This precedent means that any journalist can be extradited for prosecution in the United States for having published truthful information about the United States.
In an unprecedented move, the Justice Department has indicted WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange on 17 charges of violating the Espionage Act for publishing U.S. military and diplomatic documents exposing U.S. war crimes. He now faces up to 170 years in prison. Press freedom advocates have denounced the charges. We'll speak with Assange's attorney, Jennifer Robinson, as well as Pentagon Papers whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg, who was also charged with violating the Espionage Act in 1973 and faced over 100 years in jail.
It would be the same case as brought against me. Unfortunately, bringing that against the journalist is even more blatantly a violation of the First Amendment, freedom of the press.
And we'll speak with The Intercept's Jeremy Scahill about Trump's war on whistleblowers.
We are at an extremely dangerous moment in the history of this country. Donald Trump is using the same rhetoric used by Nazi officials in the 1930s and 40s to attack the press. He said he wants to jail journalists who publish stories he doesn't like. And he's wielding the Espionage Act like a chainsaw against journalistic sources.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The United States has charged WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange with violating the U.S. Espionage Act. On Thursday, the Justice Department announced 17 new charges against Assange over his role in the 2010 Chelsea Manning leaks, in a case that many are warning poses a grave threat to the First Amendment. This is the first time a publisher has been charged under the World War I-era law. Assange faces up to 10 years for each count of violating the Espionage Act, up to 170 years in prison. As the news broke, Trevor Tim of the Freedom of the Press Foundation said, quote, "Put simply, these unprecedented charges against Julian Assange and WikiLeaks are the most significant and terrifying threat to the First Amendment in the 21st century." After headlines, we'll speak with Assange's attorney and legendary whistleblower, Daniel Ellsberg. British Prime Minister Theresa May said today she'll resign June 7th, ending a three-year term that saw her repeatedly try and fail to usher through Britain's plan to leave the European Union. Her announcement came as British voters are set to deliver a stinging defeat to her party in European Parliament elections, with the newly formed Brexit Party expected to win when results are announced on Sunday. Prime Minister May's departure will come days after she's set to host an official state visit for President Trump and his family June 3rd. Prince Charles has invited Trump to tea at an official royal residence where he's expected to raise the issue of climate change. This weekend, Trump will travel to Japan for a state visit, where he'll meet with Prime Minister Shinzo Abe and Japan's new emperor, Naruhito. Senate Democrats are warning the Trump administration is preparing to circumvent Congress to push through $7 billion worth of U.S. weapon sales to Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and other administration officials are reportedly pressing Trump to declare a national emergency, which would bar Congress from halting the sale of the precision-guided munitions and warplanes. The move follows public outcry over the massive civilian death toll from the Saudi-led war on Yemen and last year's murder of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi inside the Saudi consulate in Istanbul. Last month, Trump vetoed a congressional war powers resolution ordering the U.S. to halt most U.S. support for the war in Yemen. President Trump has given Attorney General William Barr broad new powers to review how the Trump campaign's ties to Russia were investigated. The order will give Barr oversight to compel the CIA, the FBI, and more than a dozen other intelligence agencies to declassify documents. Trump's order came just hours after he claimed former FBI Director James Comey and former acting FBI Director Andrew McCabe were guilty of treason. Last month, Barr told lawmakers he believes intelligence agencies spied on Trump's 2016 presidential campaign, echoing Trump's repeated accusation made without evidence that President Obama wiretapped Trump's phones ahead of the election. President Trump and his political allies launched an attack on Nancy Pelosi Thursday, calling the Democratic House Speaker crazy. Trump spoke one day after he left a White House meeting with Pelosi and Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer in a staged walkout, demanding Congress end investigations into his presidency.
So I walked into the cabinet room. You had the group, crying Chuck, crazy Nancy. I tell you what, I've been watching her, and I have been watching her for a long period of time. She's not the same person. She's lost it.
Trump's attack on the House Speaker came after Pelosi accused Trump of throwing a temper tantrum during Wednesday's aborted meeting at the White House.
Another temper tantrum. Again, I pray for the President of the United States. I wish that his family or his administration or his staff would have an intervention for the good of the country.
This comes as a doctored video of House Speaker Pelosi went viral in right-wing social media circles. The video, edited from an appearance by Pelosi this week at the Center for American Progress, was slowed down to 75% speed in order to make Pelosi sound as though she's slurring her words or drunk. By Thursday night, versions of the video had circulated to millions of social media users, many of whom commented they believe Pelosi was drunk. The video was also shared by President Trump's attorney, Rudy Giuliani, who tweeted and later deleted the comment, "What is wrong with Nancy Pelosi? Her speech pattern is bizarre." Meanwhile, President Trump retweeted a mashup video of Pelosi, edited by Fox Business Channel, with the caption, "Pelosi stammers through news conference." President Trump lashed out at former Secretary of State Rex Tillerson Thursday after Tillerson spent 7 hours in a closed-door session with the House Foreign Affairs Committee. A congressional aide who was present for Tillerson's testimony later told the Washington Post, "We spent a lot of time in the conversation talking about how Putin seized every opportunity to push what he wanted. There was a discrepancy in preparation, and it created an unequal footing," unquote. Responding to Tillerson's testimony on Twitter, President Trump called his former Secretary of State dumb as a rock and totally ill-prepared and ill-equipped to be Secretary of State, unquote. An associate of Donald Trump's former campaign chair, Paul Manafort, was indicted Thursday on bribery charges. New York City prosecutors say Stephen Calk, the former chairman and CEO of Federal Savings Bank in Chicago, approved $16 million in high-risk loans to Manafort in an effort to win a senior position in the Trump administration. Prosecutors say after receiving the loans, Manafort made at least two calls to Trump's transition team in late 2016, asking for Calk to be appointed Secretary of the Army. Calk faced is up to 30 years in prison. He pleaded not guilty at an arraignment in a Manhattan court Thursday. President Trump promised Thursday to spend $16 billion to relieve farmers and agribusiness companies who've lost revenue to the growing U.S. trade war with China. Speaking to a crowd of farmers and ranchers brought into the White House, Trump repeated his false claim that China would reimburse the U.S. for the losses. The move came as China's retaliatory tariffs on U.S. vegetables and meat products have driven commodity prices to their lowest level in over a decade. President Trump's preparing to name former Virginia Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli immigration czar to oversee the Trump administration's hardline immigration policies in a new role that won't require Senate confirmation. Cuccinelli is a climate change denier who ran unsuccessfully for Virginia governor in 2013. As a state lawmaker in Virginia, Cuccinelli authored legislation seeking to force employees to speak English in the workplace, and he unsuccessfully fought to eliminate the 14th Amendment's birthright citizenship clause. Meanwhile, the family of 16-year-old migrant Carlos Hernandez Vasquez is demanding answers about how the teen died this week in U.S. Border Patrol custody after being diagnosed with the flu. This is the boy's mother, Gilberto Vasquez, speaking from Guatemala.
There is no information about how he died. That is what I want to know. And so what I am fighting for is for them to send me the body as soon as possible. Because why do they want to have him there? Why do they want him? Because they didn't take care of him.
At least six migrant children have died over the last 8 months after they were arrested crossing into the U.S. from Mexico. Before last year, no child died in immigration custody in over a decade. In Nicaragua, opponents of President Daniel Ortega held a one-day general strike Thursday to demand the release of hundreds of political prisoners. The nationwide strike came days after Ortega's government said it would begin releasing another 100 prisoners swept up in mass arrests during protests that erupted a year ago, after Ortega tried to cut Social Security benefits. Opposition groups say they're pressuring the government to meet terms of a peace deal requiring the release of almost 300 prisoners by June 18th. Back in the United States, a new campaign is calling on 2020 presidential candidates to pledge to cut Pentagon spending by at least $200 billion annually to pay for Medicare for All, a Green New Deal, and other programs. The campaign pledge called Put People Over the Pentagon also promotes alternatives to war and presses lawmakers to prevent the president from ordering military action without a declaration of war from Congress. Meanwhile, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders has unveiled a bill that would apply a small tax on Wall Street transactions in order to raise hundreds of billions of dollars for social programs. The legislation would tax stock, bonds, and derivatives trades in order to fund job creation, Medicare for All, free public college, environmental and climate change programs, housing assistance, and HIV/AIDS treatment and prevention. The bill was co-sponsored in the House by Democrat Barbara Lee of California.
With just a fraction, and this is a very modest proposal, a fraction of a tax on Wall Street, we can raise over $220 billion per year. That's $2.2 trillion over 10 years. And just think of what we could do with those resources and with that money.
The bill has the backing of another 2020 presidential contender, New York Democratic Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. On Wednesday, Gillibrand proposed a family bill of rights that would see the U.S. invest more in maternal and child health, paid family leave, affordable child care, and universal pre-K. Disgraced movie mogul Harvey Weinstein has reached a tentative $44 million deal to settle a number of civil lawsuits, including a class action suit brought by alleged survivors of rape and sexual assault. The Wall Street Journal reports the deal will see $14 million used to pay legal fees of Weinstein's associates, including his former board members. The remaining $30 million will go to settle claims by survivors who allege sexual crimes going back decades. The tentative settlement will not affect the criminal case against Weinstein in New York City, charging him with rape and other sex crimes. Weinstein has pled not guilty. His trial is scheduled for September. And youth activists in cities around the world have launched another one-day global climate strike that could rival the March 15th action that saw an estimated 1.6 million participants. Organizers inspired by the 16-year-old Swedish high school student Greta Thunberg say they're planning more than 1,350 separate strikes in every continent on Earth today, including two strikes in Antarctica. This is 19-year-old activist Marta Matias from Madrid, Spain.
It's estimated we have 11 years before climate change is irreversible. And if we don't take the necessary measures over these 11 years, we will end up without a planet. I want to defend my life on this planet, as well as the survival of my species and all of the other species that live on it.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In an unprecedented move, the Justice Department has indicted WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange on 17 charges of violating the Espionage Act for his role in publishing U.S. classified military and diplomatic documents exposing U.S. war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan. The documents were leaked by Army whistleblower Chelsea Manning. The Espionage Act of 1917 has never been used to prosecute a journalist or media outlet. The new charges come just over a month after British police forcibly removed Assange from the Ecuadorian embassy in London, where he took asylum in 2012. Initially, the Trump administration indicted Assange on a single count of helping Manning hack a government computer. But Assange faces up to 170 years in prison under the new charges, 10 years for each count of violating the Espionage Act. Press freedom advocates have denounced the new charges. Ben Wisner of the American Civil Liberties Union said, quote, for the first time in the history of our country, the government has brought criminal charges against a publisher for the publication of truthful information. This is an extraordinary escalation of the Trump administration's attacks on journalism and a direct assault on the First Amendment. Joel Simon, the head of the Committee to Protect Journalists, said, quote, press freedom in the United States and around the world is imperiled by this prosecution. The legendary journalist Seymour Hersh told the New York Times, quote, today Assange, tomorrow perhaps the New York Times and other media that publish so much of the important news and information Assange provided, unquote. Assange is being held in a British jail, but faces extradition to both the United States and Sweden, where authorities have reopened an investigation into sexual assault charges. Later in the broadcast, we'll be joined by Pentagon Papers whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg, who was charged under the espionage in 1973, and the award-winning national security journalist Jeremy Scahill of The Intercept. But first, we go to London, where we're joined by Jennifer Robinson, an attorney for Julian Assange. First, Jen, can you start off by talking about these new charges, the possibility that if Julian Assange were extradited to the United States, he could face 170 years in jail?
As you said, these are unprecedented charges. Since 2010, we've been warning about this very possibility. The Obama administration opened this criminal investigation in 2010, and we've been warning since then that any prosecution under the Espionage Act would be a direct attack on the First Amendment and all media organizations in a precedent that could be used against journalists and publishers everywhere. Since the Trump administration came to power, they've been more aggressively pursuing the investigation, and the outcome is this indictment overnight. It is a grave threat to press freedom and should be cause for concern for journalists and publishers everywhere. Because, of course, Julian Assange is not American. Everything that he did was outside of the United States. So this is a concern for all journalists and publishers anywhere in the world who are publishing truthful information about the United States.
The United States has the death penalty. What does this mean for Assange? And what agreement did the Ecuadorian government make with the British authorities in who removed Julian Assange from the embassy, where he had political asylum for the last almost 7 years?
Of course, the reason Julian went into the embassy in the first place was to protect himself from extradition to the United States to face prosecution, not in relation to the death penalty, but the asylum that was granted was to protect him from this very outcome. Publishers for publishing truthful information should not be facing criminal prosecution at all. The UK government has given an assurance against extradition to the death penalty. The UK does not typically extradite to the death penalty in any event. But that assurance does not cover off his extradition to the United States. And that's what we've been asking for a long time. It is not right or appropriate that a publisher should face criminal prosecution in this way. And 170 years, certainly a very long time in prison, is for a publisher who has won journalism awards. He's won the Sydney Peace Prize, journalism awards the world over, for having revealed government wrongdoing, human rights abuse, war crimes. This is a direct attack on the press and on democracy itself.
Can you explain what espionage means? What exactly Julian Assange faces?
Well, if you look at the indictment, while it is the Espionage Act, it's publishing classified information damaging to the United States. But if you look at the indictment and the way in which it's been described, effectively what this is a journalist and a publisher having conversations with a source about what information is available and discussing with that source publishing the information. This is what journalists do, investigative journalists do all the time. It is criminalizing the investigative journalism process and will place a massive chill on national security journalism in the United States and elsewhere around the world.
I want to turn to the late Michael Ratner, who served for many years as an attorney for Julian Assange. He was the former head of the Center for Constitutional Rights. This was Michael speaking to Democracy Now! In 2012 about the Espionage Act.
I think there's a serious question whether someone like Julian Assange, who is not a U.S. citizen, can be indicted under the Espionage Act. What duty does Julian Assange owe the United States vis-a-vis the Espionage Act? If I tomorrow surfaced documents that had to do with the Soviet Union, or Russia, rather, and what it's doing in Chechnya that were classified, could Russia actually get my extradition from the United States because I I put out classified documents belonging to Russia? I don't think so. But that would be if they actually have an indictment, and if they go after Julian Assange in the way that so far they've indicated they want to, that will certainly be an important issue. What duty did Julian Assange owe to the United States?
I want to turn now to an interview I did with Julian Assange in 2012. I visited him in the Ecuadorian embassy. Oh, this is when he was speaking on Skype to us, when he talked himself about the Espionage Act.
The new interpretation of the Espionage Act that the Pentagon is trying to hammer in to the legal system, and which the Department of Justice is complicit in, would mean the end of national security journalism in the United States, and not only the United States, because the Pentagon is trying to apply this extraterritorially. Why would it be the end of national security journalism? Because the interpretation is that if any document that the U.S. government claims to be classified is given to a journalist who then makes any part of it public, that journalist has committed espionage, and the person who gave them the material has committed the crime communicating with the enemy.
So that was Julian Assange speaking to us a few years ago. This is John Demers, the head of the Justice Department's National Security Division, briefing reporters on Thursday about the new charges against Julian Assange. He said, quote, "Some say Assange is a journalist and that he should be immune from prosecution for these actions. The department takes seriously the role of journalists in our democracy, and we thank you for it. It is not and has never been the department's policy to target them for reporting, but Julian Assange is no journalist," he said. Your response, Jennifer Robinson?
If the Department of Justice is concerned about journalism, then they ought to be concerned about the precedent this sets and the impact it will have on all American journalists. Michael Ratner was absolutely correct in making the points that he made, and I think that is the concern. It's not even just a concern about journalists in the United States, but what this precedent says about the Department of Justice exercising extraterritorial jurisdiction over journalists and publishers outside of the country for having published this information. As Michael rightly pointed out, what would it mean if Russia or China was starting to seek the extradition of American journalists for having published Chinese or Russian secrets? This is an incredibly serious precedent. And for the Department of Justice to suggest that this won't be used by the Trump administration against other media organizations and journalists, I think is naive at best.
Jennifer Robinson, Ecuador has seized some of WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange's possessions left behind when the British authorities took him out of the embassy. WikiLeaks says that Ecuador is allowing U.S. prosecutors to help themselves to Assange's belongings. Is this the case?
The Ecuador did receive a request from the United States to seize control of WikiLeaks' property that was inside the embassy and Julian's property inside the embassy. Ecuador has provided that. We are very concerned both about the fact that Ecuador has allowed their embassy staff to be questioned by U.S. prosecutors and now handing over this material. In circumstances where there is no chain of custody, we don't know who has been into the embassy and who's accessed that room, accessed the belongings. So it raises serious concerns about our ability to defend ourselves and defend him in this case, and serious concerns about the nature of the evidence and the process by which it was obtained.
Now, what about Sweden also reviving, reopening their case, their allegations of rape against Julian Assange, when they had dropped all of the charges, both of sexual assault and rape, before? What does this mean, Sweden calling for the extradition also of Julian Assange?
First, of course, he's never been charged in Sweden, and this is the third time that a different prosecutor has reopened this investigation after it has been closed. It was first closed in 2010 because the first prosecutor said there wasn't evidence of any crime. It was reopened again by a prosecutor who dragged it out for years despite our offers to cooperate. After finally questioning Julian inside the embassy, that case was dropped. The entire matter was dropped again. And now we have, now that he's in prison here, a third prosecutor reopening the case over a decade. This is by any stretch, an abusive process. He has always been willing to answer those allegations. He's given his testimony, and it's time that that matter is determined once and for all. Of course, now there is a serious question that will arise here in the UK as to which of the requests, if Sweden does seek his extradition — they've only reopened the criminal investigation, and we'll have to make a decision about whether to seek his extradition. But if they do, it raises questions about which extradition requests will take precedence. As you can see, Julian Assange is going to be in a very difficult position with respect to both extradition requests.
And which one takes precedence, U.S. or Sweden? And if Sweden were to extradite him — and again, you just said he actually has never officially been charged, even now, with rape or sexual assault — they are reopening the investigation, and that's been going on for years — if he were extradited to Sweden, his original concern was that he would then be extradited to the United States. Do you still fear this?
Of course, that was the reason he sought asylum in the first place, is that we were seeking assurances from Sweden that if he were to return to Sweden to face any potential process there with respect to those allegations, that he would not be sent to the United States. Sweden refused to give that assurance. The Australian government — he's an Australian citizen — refused to request that assurance. The Ecuadorian government, once he got asylum inside the embassy, also sought that assurance from Sweden, and they refused to give it. Now we're in a situation where we have an indictment on the record from the United States, and it will be a matter for the Home Secretary here to determine, if Sweden also requests his extradition, which of those two cases will take precedence. We are, of course, concerned about the risk that he will face if he goes back to the United States, and it will raise massive free speech questions, irrespective of whether he goes to Sweden first or not.
Jennifer Robinson, how is Julian doing in prison? He was in the Ecuadorian embassy for almost 7 years, taken out by British authorities. Where is he currently jailed, and how is he?
He's currently in prison in Belmarsh Prison in southeast London, which is a high-security prison here in the UK. We were very concerned about his health. At the time, he was forcibly removed from the embassy. He'd been denied medical treatment for more than 7 years. We are concerned it's had a permanent impact upon his health. We've recently had a visit from the UN Special Rapporteur on Torture, who came with medical experts to assess his health inside the prison. And I am very concerned about the ongoing health issues that he has, and whether he's getting adequate medical treatment here within the British prison system. He's finding it very difficult. He's very isolated. And I think the prospect of a very long extradition fight and potential extradition to the United States is a real concern. But, of course, he is resolved to fight this. As he said at his first extradition hearing, he refused to consent to extradition to the United States because he would not be extradited for doing journalism. And this case raises, as we've seen from the free speech groups that have come out overnight, this case raises fundamental questions of free speech, which is why he is resolved to absolutely fighting this extradition.
Finally, as we speak today, it's just been a few hours since the British Prime Minister, Theresa May, announced she is resigning. Will that make a difference in Julian's case?
It remains to be seen who will become the Prime Minister after Theresa May's resignation. We've already seen from the Leader of the Opposition here, Jeremy Corbyn, say that the British government should not extradite Julian to the United States to face prosecution for having revealed war crimes. So I think there would need to be a change of government here to see the British government positions change, because the Conservative government has made very clear their position on this and that it's a matter for the British courts, but have not said that they would prevent any extradition if it were ultimately ordered. So really, it depends what happens, and we've still got a very long extradition fight ahead of us.
Do you think if Jeremy Corbyn were to ascend to the prime ministership that he could free Julian Assange?
Of course, it is a matter for the courts, but the British government retains a discretion ultimately about whether to extradite a person or not. And if Jeremy Corbyn came to power, he has already said, made clear in a public statement and through the Shadow Home Secretary Diane Abbott, that Julian Assange ought not be extradited to the US for publishing truthful information and for revealing war crimes. So it remains to be seen what would happen if he came to power and where Julian was in the extradition process at that time, but it is a possibility.
And finally, explain the sentence he is now serving and what will happen after that sentence.
He has been convicted of a bail offence for having sought asylum when he did going into the embassy. He was given a sentence of 50 weeks, which he's currently serving in Belmarsh prison. And the extradition process will carry on shortly. The US issued a provisional warrant back in April when he was first arrested. Now that there's an additional indictment, we are expecting a new extradition request that will include those additional charges, and the extradition process will begin. Fighting extradition with respect to the United States can take anywhere between 1 and 3 years. So this is the beginning of, like I said, what will be quite a long process.
Do you think that U.S. press has come out strongly enough? Today, the New York Times, in an editorial, said it's a marked escalation in the effort to prosecute Mr. Assange, one that could have a chilling effect on American journalism as it has been practiced for generations. It's aimed straight at the heart of the First Amendment.
I think it's very important that the New York Times and other major media organizations come forward and speak about this principle and stand against this prosecution, because, as you've rightly pointed out, this will have a chilling impact on all media organizations and is a cause for concern that the precedent that is being set by the Trump administration could be used against the New York Times and other media organizations. We've been saying since 2010 that the media needs to get behind WikiLeaks, and they need to acknowledge that any prosecution would set that precedent and cause them risk. Finally, we're seeing an acknowledgement of that, and I hope that we'll see that continue as this fight goes on.
Jennifer Robinson, we want to thank you for being with us. Human rights attorney who's been advising Julian Assange and WikiLeaks since 2010. When we come back, the legendary Pentagon Papers whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg, he faced over 100 years in jail for espionage. He'll talk to us about Julian Assange. Stay with us. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. As we continue to look at the Justice Department's unprecedented decision to indict WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange on 17 charges of espionage for publishing U.S. military and diplomatic documents exposing U.S. war crimes, Assange faces up to 170 years in prison. We're joined now by Pentagon Papers whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg. He was charged in the early 70s with violating the Espionage Act for leaking a top-secret report on U.S. involvement in Vietnam to the New York Times and other publications. Ellsberg faced over 100 years in jail. He was a military analyst who worked with the Pentagon and the RAND Corporation. Daniel Ellsberg joins us now from Berkeley, California. Dan, welcome back to Democracy Now! Your response to this unprecedented series of charges against Julian Assange.
Well, Amy, I was sitting here listening to your stunning litany of events that are going on now in the country. You started out with mentioning Prime Minister May's in Britain efforts, long efforts, and the failure of her efforts to exit from the European Union, from Brexit. And it made me think of the other news you were giving of President Trump's 2 years' effort to exit from the American Constitution. You mentioned the 14th Amendment that's under attack. Yesterday is a day that will be live in the history of journalism, of law in this country, and of civil liberties in this country, because it was a direct attack on the First Amendment, an unprecedented one. There hasn't actually been such a significant attack on the freedom of the press, the First Amendment, which is the bedrock of our republic, really, our form of government, since my case in 1971, 48 years ago. But this is, I was indicted as a source. And I warned newsmen then that that would not be the last indictment of a source if I were convicted. Well, I wasn't convicted. The charges were dropped on governmental misconduct, and it was another 10 years before anybody else faced that charge under the Espionage Act again, Samuel Loring Morrison. And it was not until President Obama that 9 cases were brought, as I'd been warning for so long. But my warning really was that it wasn't going to stop there. Almost inevitably, there would be a stronger attack directly on the foundations of journalism against editors, publishers, and journalists themselves. And we've now seen that as of yesterday. That's a new front in President Trump's war on the free press, which he regards as the enemy of the people.
And the Trump administration saying Julian Assange is not a publisher, is not a journalist. That's why he is not protected by the First Amendment.
In the face of this new indictment, and let me correct something that's been said just a little wrong by everybody so far. He doesn't just face 170 years. That's for the 17 counts on the Espionage Act, each worth 10. Plus, he's still facing the 5-year conspiracy charge that he started out with a few weeks ago. I was sure that the administration did not want to keep Julian Assange in jail just for 5 years. So I've been expecting these Espionage Act charges. I really expected them later after he was extradited, because adding them now makes it a little more complicated for Britain to extradite him now, as I understand it. They're not supposed to extradite for political offenses or for political motives. And this is obviously for both political motives and political offenses. So from Julian Assange's point of view, it makes extradition a little more difficult. Why then did they bring it right now? Well, coming back to the case, by the way, that I faced only 11 Felony Act charges, each worth 10 years in prison, plus a conspiracy charge worth 5. So I was facing exactly 115 years in prison. He's facing exactly 175. Now, that's not a difference that makes any difference. In both cases, it's a question of a life sentence. I think that the reason they brought these charges so soon, because they had until June 12th, was to lay out the necessity to lay out for extradition all the charges they planned to bring. And I don't assume these are the last ones. They've got a couple of weeks left to string up some new charges. They started out with a charge that made Julian look something other than a normal journalist. The help to hacking a password sounded like something that even in the digital age, perhaps most journalists wouldn't do. And that would hope to separate him from the support of other journalists. In this case, when they had to lay out their larger charge, this is straight journalism. They mentioned, for instance, that he solicited investigative material. He solicited classified information terribly. He didn't just passively receive it over the transom. I can't count the number of times I've been solicited for classified information, starting with the Pentagon Papers, but long after that. And that's by every member of the responsible press that I dealt with, the Times, the Post, AP, you name it. That's journalism. So what they have done is recognizable, I think, this time to all journalists that they are in the crosshairs of this one. They may not have known enough about digital performance to help a source conceal her identity by using new passwords, as Julian was charged with. They may not be able to do that, but every one of them has eagerly received classified information and solicited it. So every journalist, and not only in this country, and not only at the federal level, already Brian Carmody in San Francisco has had his house broken into with sledgehammers to get all his material, looking for his source in a local dispute. Daniel Hale, an NSA, has been brought. I think that President Trump has, in effect, opened the doors to these kinds of constitutions in state and country jurisdictions, state and county, I meant to say, jurisdictions, and undoubtedly in other countries as well that may not have a First Amendment but have looking to some precedent for the United States. That's what it's able to do. So there's a full-scale, multi-front war going on, not only in this country, and President Trump is leading the way.
We're going to break and then come back to our discussion. But first, we're going to play a video of Jeremy Scahill on The Intercept talking about Trump's war on whistleblowers. We've been speaking with and will continue with Daniel Ellsberg, one of the world's most famous whistleblowers. In 71, he was a high-level defense analyst when he leaked a top-secret report on the history of U.S. involvement in Vietnam to the New York Times and other publications that came to be known as the Pentagon Papers and played a key role in ending the Vietnam War. Stay with us. By Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman as we continue to look at the Justice Department's unprecedented decision to indict WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange for violating the Espionage Act. We turn now to a new video produced by The Intercept titled, Why You Should Care About Trump's War on Whistleblowers. It features Intercept co-founder Jeremy Scahill, who will join us after this video.
On June 16, 1918, the prominent socialist labor leader Eugene Debs delivered a speech in Canton, Ohio. And in that speech, Debs argued against U.S. involvement in World War I, and he praised activists who had been organizing against the military draft or had been convicted of sedition. At the time, Debs was one of the most prominent socialists in the United States, and his speech came on the heels of the Russian Revolution and the rise of global socialist and communist movements.
The working class who fight all the battles, the working class who make the supreme sacrifices, the working class who freely shed their blood and furnish their corpses, have never yet had a voice in either declaring war or making peace.
Soon after Debs delivered that speech, he was arrested and charged under a new law in the U.S. that had passed just a year earlier. It was called the Espionage Act. Debs and his lawyers argued that his anti-war speech was protected by the First Amendment to the Constitution. They lost, and Debs was sentenced to 10 years in prison. The case eventually went to the U.S. Supreme Court, where the justices voted unanimously to uphold his conviction. I believe in free speech, in war, as well as in peace, Debs told the jury during his trial. If the espionage law stands, then the Constitution of the United States is dead. Congress eventually amended parts of that act, but the thrust of the law has remained in effect to this day. Anarchist Emma Goldman was also prosecuted under the act. Julius and Ethel Rosenberg were executed after being convicted under the law. Throughout its history, the Espionage Act has been used as a weapon to attack free speech and dissent. And then came the Pentagon Papers case, where the government charged the whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg under the Espionage Act. He faced more than 100 years in prison.
How can you measure the jeopardy that I'm in, whether it's 10 years, 20 years, 115 years, or other ludicrous amounts like that, to the penalty that has been paid already by 50,000 American families here and hundreds of thousands of Vietnamese families?
The charges were ultimately dismissed in 1973, mostly because of rampant misconduct and illegal surveillance by the Nixon administration. But it was this model, developed by Nixon's Justice Department, that would be passionately adopted decades later as the weapon of choice of President Barack Obama to wage attacks on journalistic sources and journalism.
Since I've been in office, my attitude has been zero tolerance for these kinds of leaks and speculation.
Obama's Justice Department indicted 8 journalistic sources under the Espionage Act, more than all U.S. presidents before him combined. Among these cases was U.S. Army whistleblower Chelsea Manning, former CIA officer Jeffrey Sterling, National Security Agency whistleblower Thomas Drake, and NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden. In some of these cases, people were sentenced to lengthy prison terms. In others, the government ruined the lives of the targets.
We're going to find the leakers. We're going to find the leakers. They're going to pay a big price for leaking.
And then Donald Trump takes power and immediately begins using the playbook refined and sharpened by his predecessor, President Obama. Donald Trump is now surpassing Obama's 8-year record in just over 2 years in office. The first case Trump brought was against Reality Winner, who was accused of leaking a top-secret document to a news organization. That NSA document related to alleged Russian intelligence operations aimed at breaching software systems used in some U.S. voting systems. And then FBI agent Terry Albury was indicted for allegedly leaking information about FBI surveillance and informant operations to a news organization. The government did not name the media outlet in these cases, but other news organizations attributed the reporting to The Intercept. And then in early May came the arrest of another alleged whistleblower, Daniel Everett Hale. The Justice Department is accusing Hale of leaking documents on the global assassination program and drone programs run by the Obama administration. This indictment also does not name a news organization, but Trump administration officials in leaks to news organizations have claimed that it's The Intercept. Now, I want to be clear here. Nothing I say here should be understood as discussing the specifics of the Hale case. The Intercept does not discuss confidential sources or alleged sources, whoever they are. But I want to state the following. Whoever provided documents for The Intercept's reporting on U.S. assassination operations should be viewed as a hero who did a major public service at immense personal risk. This whistleblower provided the most detailed account ever published of what amounts to a secret legal system, wherein the President of the United States and his advisors make lists of people to kill, including U.S. citizens who have not been charged with crimes. These documents we published showed that at times as many as 9 out of 10 people that the U.S. kills in its so-called targeted assassinations are not the intended target. They revealed how the watchlisting system has spiraled out of control and how U.S. citizens have no right to know if or why they are on watch lists or kill lists. This was an extremely important and brave moment in the history of the post-9/11 secrecy and mass killing operations and the fight against them. Back in 2015, I discussed this on Democracy Now!
This government has been relentless in its pursuit of people of conscience who blow the whistle and has characterized them as traitors and spies, and in the process has criminalized the ability to do independent journalism that is meant to hold them accountable, the government accountable.
We are at an extremely dangerous moment in the history of this country. Donald Trump is using the same rhetoric used by Nazi officials in the 1930s and 40s to attack the press. He said he wants to jail journalists who publish stories he doesn't like. And he's wielding the Espionage Act like a chainsaw against journalistic sources. What makes it all so much worse is that it was the constitutional law scholar and Trump predecessor, Barack Obama, who teed Trump up, who laid the groundwork, who blazed the trail for this extremely deranged and dangerous man currently occupying 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. But look at the way these stories are covered in the broader media. With a few notable exceptions, the lack of solidarity or just basic understanding of how dangerous these cases are is just largely absent. Instead, there are attacks on the news organizations or the reporters. For all of the talk of how dangerous Trump is to a free press, why hasn't the Reality Winner case been covered more extensively? Why is a CNN reporter losing credentials a national scandal and threatening alleged whistleblowers with 50 years in prison is an on story? My colleague James Risen knows a lot about the Espionage Act. He fought the Bush and Obama administrations for some 7 odd years when they tried to force him to testify against an alleged source being prosecuted under the act. Recently, Jim was on Democracy Now! Discussing how many media organizations cover these cases.
I think that's a fundamental flaw in the way the press covers these things, is that they look at it as a crime rather than as an attack by the Justice Department on the press in the United States, which is what this is.
Daniel Everett Hale is facing a half a century in prison for his alleged crime of blowing the whistle on a secret assassination program that regularly resulted in the killing of civilians, including an American teenager. None of this is about espionage. And it should be clear to every journalist in this country, to every person of conscience, that what this prosecution is about is threatening anyone who even thinks of leaking, say, a Trump tax return. This is about criminalizing journalism. It's about increasing the secrecy and decreasing the transparency. It's an assault on the very idea of a democratic society. At these moments, silence is complicity. Everyone should care about what happened to Reality Winner and what's happening again to Chelsea Manning and what's happened to Edward Snowden and, yes, what's happening to Julian Assange. And we should all care what happens to Daniel Hale. This is a precedent-setting moment, not just legally, but morally, because this is not the end. This is the beginning, and they will eventually come for other news organizations, or they will scare media outlets from doing high-stakes national security reporting. It doesn't matter what you think of any of these individual whistleblowers. It doesn't matter what you think of The Intercept. But it does matter that we all recognize that this is an attack on our basic rights to information about what the U.S. government does in our names and with our tax dollars. It matters that people who blow the whistle on crimes and war crimes be defended and not abandoned or portrayed as violent criminals or traitors. All of us must ask ourselves where we stand. History will remember our answers.
Why you should care about Trump's war on whistleblowers. A new video by The Intercept featuring Jeremy Scahill, co-founder of The Intercept, who's joining us now live in studio, host of the weekly podcast Intercepted. Also with us, Pentagon Papers whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg. So, Jeremy, you did this video before these new charges of espionage were brought against Julian Assange, for which he could face more than 170 years in prison.
And I think it's so important to remind people that Chelsea Manning, the whistleblower in this case, is again in prison. Why is she in prison? She's in prison indefinitely right now for her refusal to participate in a grand jury proceeding that had at its center an attempt by the Trump Justice Department to criminalize national security journalism. You know, a lot of people will tweet and say, oh, Trump is attacking the free press. We need to stand up against this. Who stood up against it and already has paid a price? Chelsea Manning. Chelsea Manning was put in prison for 62 days for her refusal to participate in the recent grand jury. Then she was dragged in front of a new grand jury and said, I refuse to participate in this. And Chelsea Manning launched an all-out attack on the grand jury system in general, but also has talked about this in the context of a war on press freedom. Everyone who believes, as the New York Times has now come out and said, as other journalists are, that this is an assault on press freedom should be demanding that the ongoing persecution of Chelsea Manning end immediately and that she should be released from prison. Look what's happened, Amy.
I just
Trump is trying to run the deck on this. They are digging up old cases. They are trying to throw the book at anyone who does critical national security reporting. This isn't about Julian Assange, 2016, the election, Sweden. This is about a war on the press, and it was a huge, fatal mistake that major news organizations refused to stand up when they started coming for WikiLeaks and Chelsea Manning in 2010. Huge mistake. They owe some of the responsibility for this.
I want to read Army whistleblower Chelsea Manning's statement that she just released from jail on Thursday. She said, this administration describes the press as the opposition party and an enemy of the people. Today, they use the law as a sword and have shown their willingness to bring the full power of the state against the very institution intended to shield us from such excesses. Those are the words of Chelsea Manning speaking to us from jail.
Yeah, and again, every media organization in this country should be demanding the dropping of the charges against Assange, particularly the Espionage Act charges, and the freedom of Chelsea Manning. In the other case that recently happened here, let's remember, the Trump Justice Department under Jeff Sessions, the first indictment that they issued was against Reality Winner, allegedly for leaking a document that was dealing with Russian military attacks or attempted attacks on U.S. software systems used to service the elections. Then they go after Terry Albury, an African-American FBI agent in Minnesota, on charges that he leaked information about their
neo-COINTELPRO type operations about the informant system and how they set people up. And then there was a BuzzFeed source that was indicted. There was a Senate staffer who they went after. Trump now is blasting through Obama's horrid record of eight journalistic sources charged under the Espionage Act. But this happens in the context, too, of William Barr, who is an obsessive, compulsive addict of the unitary executive, the notion that the executive branch should be a dictatorship when it comes to national security policy. They are going after people who blew the whistle on war crimes. And for the news organizations that were publishing and selling their papers based on the risks that Chelsea Manning took, based on the risks that Julian Assange took, waited far too long. Far too long. You know, the famous speech that was given about when they, you know, when they came for the socialists, I didn't speak up because I wasn't a socialist. When they came for WikiLeaks was not yesterday, Amy. When they came for WikiLeaks started in 2010. And where was the outrage?
I want to go back to 2017 when Mike Pompeo talked about WikiLeaks. This wasn't when he was Secretary of State, but this was in his first address as CIA director.
WikiLeaks walks like a hostile intelligence service and talks like a hostile intelligence service. It has encouraged its followers to find jobs at the CIA in order to obtain intelligence. It directed Chelsea Manning in her theft of specific secret information. It overwhelmingly focuses on the United States while seeking support from anti-democratic countries and organizations. It's time to call out WikiLeaks for what it really is. A non-state hostile intelligence service often abetted by state actors like Russia.
Yes, that's at the time CIA Director Pompeo. Now he's Secretary of State. Dan Ellsberg, your response and what it means to talk about WikiLeaks in this way for Julian Assange.
Why is it Julian Assange selected by this administration as the first target in our national history and the first target in 100 years of the Espionage Act to use that act against a journalist? Because he's not regarded with liking by very many people. He's a ripe fruit here to be collected because a lot of journalists are mad at him because of his actions in 2016, which, by the way, I'm not happy about either. The reason for many people to hate even Julian Assange, not me, is that his actions appeared and seemed to be even motivated by a desire to help Donald Trump in the election. That's a serious charge for anybody. It's like all of those at Fox News or Stephen Bannon. The fact is, I would be making the stand I am now against extraditing Julian Assange or prosecuting him under the Espionage Act, which means he could not get a fair trial as a whistleblower or journalist any more than any of the others who've been subject to that. All the ones before the recent ones, this Jeremy Scahill mentioned, I've met. I made an effort to meet them as whistleblowers. I like them. I respect them. I identify with them. And I have warned the press, as I said, for all, you're not going to end with whistleblowers. This is going to go after you. Why hasn't the press come out before? Because, frankly, they didn't feel it was pointing at them. It was at their sources. The only real commitment I've discovered they feel to their sources is not to reveal their name, not to help them in their trial, even by comprehensive and fair coverage of it in any way. But now this is them. If Stephen Bannon or Fox News was sitting facing the charges that he is facing, that Julian Assange is facing now, facing the possibility of extradition, whether they were American or not, I would be defending them with the same words and the same vehemence as I do right now, Julian Assange,
Dan,
because our fresh freedom is at stake.
Jeremy, 30 seconds, and I also want to talk about the content of what Julian Assange released.
Julian Assange released evidence, very clear evidence, of U.S. war crimes, including the murder of Reuters journalists and civilians, duplicity, dirty tricks around the world on the part of the U.S. government. I agree with Dan, and I just want to say it's actually irrelevant whether whether you think Julian Assange is a journalist. The First Amendment does not just cover freedom of the press. It's all of our rights. And this is not just about press freedom. This is about a democratic society and a major frontal assault on our basic liberties and free speech.
Jeremy Scahill of The Intercept and legendary Pentagon whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg will continue part two at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.